Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now, NASA, blog talk radio show. I get that out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. We're so happy to have you here with us tonight. But we've got such a special guest, and I'm excited to introduce you to him and talk more about his story. But first of all, we have a simple purpose here at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so with only two goals. One, by educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone, and two, by offering hope and healing through numerous apps, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And you can find a lot of that information on NASCA.org. That's NASCA.org. That's the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And we are on scan number 2981 this evening, 2981. And if you would like to call in and be part of the panel, we would love to have you call in. That number is 646-595-2118, and you can also listen to it over your computer if you want to go on to the NASCA.org. This evening, our special guest is Steve McAvoy, and he is from Louisiana, from where our good host is, John, where he's from as well.
Yes.
And we have John on with us tonight. Hey, John.
Hello.
Glad you're here with us. So, unfortunately, Steve was used by a teacher in the fifth and sixth grade. It was between fifth and sixth grade, he says, in the summer. And he was a member of the clergy, a deacon. Steve was encouraged to be trained as an altar boy by this man, who sometimes molested him, and other students even watched. Oh, gosh. Steve was trapped and did not know how to escape. I couldn't tell anyone, Steve explained. We were taught that clergy were the next closest thing to God. When the new school year commenced, Steve found a way to start drinking, which became even easier in high school. I became a full-time alcoholic, says Steve. His sobriety came in his early 20s and was sober for 15 years. Life moved forward, and he raised a family and was working. But in 2018, unfortunately, his life was thrown into chaos again when the original predator was on the news. So John came as a surprise to his wife and his family, which I know is so hard. I'm so sorry about all that, Steve. You know, and he's got a little bit more on here that he says, but I'm going to just let him explain his story, and he said, my heart is just hurting for that little boy. So let's welcome our guest, Steve McAvoy, on. Steve, are you there?
I am here, ma'am. I appreciate it. And
hey. Hi,
I don't need you getting emotional over my story.
Oh. Well, I do. It breaks my heart every time. I know this is what we do on this, you know, show and everything, but it is sad, and it does break my heart whenever I hear another story that I haven't heard before.
Oh, it does.
So,
and,
I'm just sorry to do that.
You know, I mean, you know, whenever someone talks about child sex abuse, it's heartbreaking. You know, it's a life we grew up in, and I'm just glad I'm still here. You know, of all the times I wanted to commit suicide, I'm glad I'm still here. You know, and I'm glad that I can reach out to others.
And we're glad. Yeah. Yeah. That's what this is all about, is getting your story out there and letting others see that you can survive through this. It's not someone by any means.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure as John has explained to you, a lot of the people on the show are survivors as well, most of them. And so we can all kind of sympathize with everything.
So that you know the background. So that you know the background, John and I were abused by the same clergy member.
Yes.
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Now, we were in different grades, you know, but we were abused by the same clergy member.
I'm sorry.
You know, George Brignac was a monster.
Yeah, to put it mildly.
Yes.
In fact,
very
mildly. Steve,
I mean,
your sister was in my class, and so that just
that.
Goes to show how close we were, you know, with all of this. Is that her? I remember her like it was yesterday. You couldn't forget Kelly. You know, she was just that type of a girl, very sweet. The whole family, a beautiful family. Let me tell you something. Yeah.
Now, was it just males that he went after, or did he have any contact with females as well?
I never saw him touch a female. You know, I saw him go after every male in the school when he had an opportunity. You know, and there was a recent, about a year and a half ago, one of the classmates read my story and came forward to the judge about watching me getting sexual abuse in class. And just recently, which has not been released, a teacher came forward about Brignac, not about me specifically, but about Brignac having, you know, about the whole school knowing.
And this is
that
very
true. It was someone that they protected.
This is very, very true. Yeah. It was horrible what this guy did to the community. And Steve is only even touching on a little bit of when he says the community. Everybody knew what was happening back then. You know, not just the community, because our community stretches. In other words, our kids leave from this particular school, St. Matthew, and go to Rommel. They go to Shaw. They go to all over, to high schools around the area.
There's
Brother Martin. That's right, Jesuit. It goes to El Sal. It goes on and on and on. So this community branches and branches and branches. In other words, in the entire Southeast Louisiana by a certain period knew what was going on with a lot of us at the time. Yeah.
Wow. And everyone just kept protecting him.
Well, the church kept protecting him. The church kept covering him up. I know that, you know, during summer school, I went home and I said, I don't want to go back there. And my mom said, why? And I said, I don't like the way the teacher tickles me. You know, I couldn't tell her what was actually happening. And she went to go complain to the school, and they wouldn't let her complain. You know.
Oh, really?
You know, I mean, and that's, you know, that's the principal of the school would not let her complain. And this tells you how bad they knew of everything going on, yet did nothing about it. And, you know, like I said, when I started this show, I'm here for everybody out there because I can tell everybody out there that's been abused, it wasn't your fault. It was their fault.
Yeah.
And the shame and the guilt does not belong to us. It belongs to them. And, you know, I mean, in 2019, I walked in the door one morning and I told my wife, babe, you better get me to a frickin' mental hospital right now. I'm going to kill myself. And that's how bad it had gotten. Having to go through reliving and recalling my entire memory of what it was like to be raped as a child. And I was in a terrible place, a terrible, terrible place. And,
Daddy,
you know, I sat down. Yeah.
So the time that you told your mom that you didn't want to go back to school, your mom went to the school and wanted to complain, but they wouldn't let her. So how were you feeling during that time? And then you were sent right back to, you continued on through the whole summer because the school wouldn't let her complain? Or how?
I didn't know she went.
What exactly? Oh, you didn't know. Okay.
What's that? I did not know.
Yeah, you didn't
know. I did not know she went to the school. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, that was a brand new school to me. And what's that?
That
was a brand new
deal. You just. Yeah.
You know, I hold nothing against my parents. My parents, if I'd have told them everything, my dad would probably be in jail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's one of the biggest fears. You know, as a child, you know, not only was I threatened by the teacher, but I was threatened by, you know, knowing what the church meant. Being an altar boy, being, you know, in those positions and things of that nature, were terrible. Because the church was everything. The clergy members were everything. And, you know, we were thrown into a backdrop. And, I mean, we used to go, you know, I mean, Sunday mornings, we used to go, you know, into the back rooms, get partially undressed, and put on our wardrobe and go march down the aisle. You know, that's not what church is supposed to be. And it's, or, you know, anybody being sexually abused needs to understand this is not life. Sexually, yeah. Mentally, physically, I don't care what it is. This is not life, you know. And
it's not the, it's not ever the life that we thought we were actually living at the time. Because we were not only completely blindsided by the sex abuse, we were blindsided at the guilt in the community. We were blindsided by the law. We were blindsided by other, you know, friends that were our closest friends. Once they knew what was going on, turned their backs big time. I mean, on both of us. Especially, you know, in a situation when they knew that finally this monster was dragged away. I mean, he was arrested in handcuffs from this school, right, on a Monday morning, hauled in, okay, then later taken to court, okay, and eventually found acquitted of these crimes, okay? That goes to show you the in-depth of the society we were living in. He was hooked up from the start with Steve's case. When he mentioned his mom going in there and didn't know about it. Well, it turns out that I knew that my mom was also there at the time when his mom was there, I found out, okay? So this is how it became to be, is that my mom said, you know, there's another boy at the school. I said, I know, Mom, you know, and it was Steve, you know. But he had actually said earlier in the show that it was just not us, okay? At the time, it was my time. At the other time, it was Steve's time. And in between, he would fill in the gaps and he'd get other kids, you know? We don't know a true number throughout it all. However, what I can say is that I know for a fact from what's being presented in the court system right now. Now, look at that fact, okay? Just the court system alone, okay? They're coming up with another 27 victims, all right? We know that number's low. We know it's real low. However, how many settled earlier? How many didn't come forward? You know, how many are deceased, okay? Well, I know for one that is, and he's no longer with us, so he can't come on the show and share a story about this monster. So Steve knows enough, you know. Mine,
he was privately,
Steve.
He was privately tutored by George Brignac.
Uh-huh. Well,
and
mine is Matthew
to
Quirk. Okay, mine is Matthew Quirk. All right, that's who this is. His family, it was there.
I remember Matthew.
Yeah, no, they're not in shame. In fact, he testified in my trial, Steve. Matthew was one of them. But Matthew is no longer with us. Otherwise, he would be here tonight, probably, you know, just for support in general. That's who he was, you know.
Well,
but
Johnny,
go ahead.
Johnny Balsamo was mine.
Balsamo, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we
Johnny
know of
Balsamo
a couple others,
sure.
But I... You know, Johnny's passed, and then, you know, there's some others, but I'm not going to mention their names, and they're still,
that's fine.
Alive
and what you have to y'all understand is that there are a lot of people right now that are still in a lot of litigation work here, okay? So some of the names can't be put out there, but some can. But the names that we can say, at least in my side are people that were warriors, okay? They actually stood up at the time. You know, there were some others that were victims that what I would say were so under the radar of the archdiocese is that they continue to stay underneath that umbrella of the archdiocese forever. You know, I know Johnny Balsamo was one that stayed there for a while, you know, but then he got away also. So there's quite a bit, you know, that these stories of these people are unbelievable when it comes down to everything that we're talking about here, about how they were abused, when they were abused. George Brignac pinpointed his subjects in a given time. He knew exactly what he was doing and when he was doing it. And, you know, earlier you mentioned about the any girls, right, Kim? You'd asked if there were any girls. Well, here's what the abuse was on the girls, okay? No, he did not ever, in my opinion, touch a girl. What he did do, though, is that he would tell them straight out, you need to close your legs while you're sitting in your desk, okay, because it's not appropriate. So these are 9, 10-year-old girls, and I know for sure that this is a true fact because they've told me. I mean, they have literally called me up and said, John, this is what he told me. I said, I believe it. I can remember those times, you know. But this is just what kind of monster this person was. The most evil man that ever walked the earth, in my opinion.
And so at some point, both are thinking that this was natural. I mean, the thing that was going on, because so many people knew about it and wasn't doing anything. No? You know it wasn't?
No, I knew this was not natural. This was, you know, this violated.
I was scared.
Yes, we were all scared. Scared. Yeah. I mean, literally, this was not natural. This was not something that we thought was common because it didn't happen to everybody. It only happened to a certain few.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just that. It's that no one had ever, you know, done anything like this to me before. And,
right.
You know, and
not
I was kind of like, oh, well, you know.
Not to mention that Steve and I actually kind of look a little bit alike if you want to look at features back then, you know.
Oh, geez.
If you want to look
yes.
at... I mean, a lot. Even this blonde hair, you know, I got blue eyes, you know. I mean, it was very similar. It's just amazing, you know, some of the people that I look at that have the similarities in the way they look, you know. So I just want to throw that out there because
there was nothing that I thought that this was supposed to be normal. You know, and, you know, it affected my life immediately. You know, the first time that he raped me, I knew, sorry, I knew this wasn't normal. That was not life. That was not what we're supposed to be going through as children. You know, because it was forcible, and you know, it put a whole new perspective into my life. And, you know, that perspective was, okay, how do I cope with this? Well, as a child, you don't know how to cope with this. And I'm glad that this child now has someone that it's coping, not only coping with this, but it's trying to protect everybody else. You know, and I never understood my life because I would always look out for children. Because all this was buried in my mind. But I never recalled the actual, you know, being raped until I saw his picture again in 2018. But I would always look out for children. I could never, you know, stand to see a child being hurt, you know, in any way. And I can say that, you know, from the goodness of my heart, after I've been through counseling for the last couple of years, which I have, you know, church hasn't paid for any of it, you know, it all comes out of my pocket. And it's expensive. That I can sit back and literally say, you know, gosh, I never realized that I was always there for everybody else, no matter what. It wasn't about money. It wasn't about anything else. But, you know, for most of my life, it was all of my life. It's all about helping others. And, you know, I have to be there for somebody else, you know, and I really had to step back in 2019 and start focusing on me, you know, for a good bit. And then I realized, well, no, it's not just me. I'm not the only one. So I started coming forward, and I posted my story. You know, it was heartbreaking. It was terrible. It was, you know, I'd walk into my parents, because I still care for my parents. I'd walk in the door and they'd ask me about it, and I'd break down into tears. And I don't do that anymore because I'm not ashamed of it anymore. And it's because I've come forward and you know, told the world, you know, look, this was not my fault. This was about a monster.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, do you mind me interrupting you for just a minute?
No, go right ahead.
We have a couple people, yeah, we have a couple people on the panel here, and I know that one of our other NASCAR members and sisters is on, and her name is Sarah, and she had her hand raised, so I think she wanted to ask you a question. Okay, if we bring her on?
Not a problem. No, go right ahead.
Hey, Sarah, are you there? Regular girl?
Yes, I'm here. Regular girl, that's right, yeah. Yeah, what a story. I wanted to say something about, I was one of the girls who was around with this clergy, with the priests and the brothers who were the criminals of the boys, so I can tell you how they treated the girls. And they did not like us. They did not like me at all, is how they treated the girls. Because they didn't like girls. They did not like little girls. So they did not like, and I can tell you what happened. I have a couple of stories. So what it was like was, I did not know pedophilia. Like, I was not tuned into that part of it. But I was tuned into the homosexual part of it. And I told my friends about it. It was like I could feel it. I could feel, and it's like the brothers and the priests who were doing, my brother had been an altar boy, and I had witnessed the sexual abuse of my brother, but it was done by the women. Yet there was some really horrible abuse by my father, too. My father was very homophobic. And when you mentioned that part of your story that involved the public humiliation, that was that part of the trauma. It's almost like I was not surprised. I grew up in that kind of an environment where there was this horrific homophobia and sexual abuse by people in authority. I witnessed this, and they hated the girls and the women, and I was one of them. And I knew that they were homosexual. So I told my friends this. And I could see them, like, sort of grooming the boys. And the boys didn't want to make out with us. So I said, well, they're fags. That's what they are. We made up songs about them. And there was this one priest. He eventually got caught, and they shipped him away. But he did this move one time, and he called me a name. I was, like, probably no more than 14 at the time. And he said my name and something about me. And he did such an outrageously queen move where he was overweight, too. And he thrust his hands upon his hips as he said this thing to me that my friends burst into laughter at him. It was such a queen move in, like, 1966. But it was like, you know, it's 1966, right? But it was in the air. You could feel it. You could feel it. And what they would do, the other brothers who were not as flaming as he was, it was like in the horseplay. See, the guys in this Irish Catholic neighborhood, a little bit mixed Italian, they were very heavily into sports. So it was like I could see that the little bit that my brother told me, that what went on behind the altar boy scene was sex. He told me this.
Yep.
And we lived right next door to the Christian brother's house. And I did not want to know anymore, but he told me that there were certain priests and brothers who, like, did weird sex stuff with certain altar boys. Plus, I could see some of the boys who were my age. It's like I was just good, always good at sort of watching behavioral traits, and almost like I was psychic or something, which I know now. Alice Miller said this. Children of abusive parents, it's like you have to get good at nonverbal behavior. So you have to watch to see, is somebody going to hit me now all of a sudden out of the blue? So you get very good at nonverbal cues. So I was getting good at that. And I would watch these certain brothers and priests who liked to do horseplay with these young guys. And I would say to my friends, they're fucking gay. That's what they're doing. And so, like I said, I wasn't tuned into the pedophilia, but if you think about it, it's like, what if somebody was gay? It was like I was already tuned into. They weren't, like, looking for a boyfriend in the priesthood. They were looking for a boyfriend in these 13 and 14-year-olds. That's who they were looking to clown around with, you know, and cajole and clown around with. I could feel
it. You know what I'm wondering also, that you bring that up? I wonder how many actual altar boys, and I'm sure there has to be a stat out there somewhere, that actually became gay. You know, a lot of my friends are.
Yes.
I know several. But here's the thing, is that how many of them actually did become gay because of the fact that they were abused by a deacon or a priest?
Yes.
You know, there has to be that, a stat somewhere. I've never looked into that because... What?
That's right. I'm sure there are people who have looked into it, though, because at the same time, they were getting special attention. And I remember also watching the ones who quit. Like, there were certain guys who then quit.
Yes.
They didn't want to be altar boys anymore.
Very good point there.
I remember them talking, and I remember them talking about it, too. It was like I remember thinking to myself, well, the reason they're given for quitting doesn't really make sense, that much sense either.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that has something to do with what my brother was talking about is going on behind the scenes.
Right.
I remember thinking this to myself.
Yeah,
you know,
that
especially
is so
now
true because even Steve mentioned that earlier. You know, when he was talking about coming down there, I was the same also. We went to the same school, so we experienced all this together, and he's so right. You know, that same scenario that picture you're painting is absolutely 100% correct. You know, I remember some of the kids that quit. They actually, some of them had left school every now and then, you know. And I guarantee that's what it was about.
And I really related
to
it.
Well, we know that's what it's about.
Well, we know what it's about. That's right, Steve. Yes.
And you know what this brings up to? I was going to call in about something else, but it has to do with this. It's called the prostitute archetype. The prostitute archetype. And what the prostitute archetype is, meaning that that behavior gets brought into our lives in many other ways besides just trading sex for money. It becomes a way of life where we think that we have to trade this or this or that for our way of life to make a living. And it becomes very, very dysfunctional.
Unfortunately, in Steve's situation is that that was never the case, okay, is that the fact that we had to actually pay, okay? We together as brothers had to pay a tremendous sacrifice for stepping up, you know, and coming forward and actually, you know, trying to do the right thing. This is what happened, is that it was the reverse role was played here, you know? So, you know, this is you know, his night and his story, but that's exactly the point, is that we suffered a lot due to the fact that, you know, this guy literally tried to make us that, you know, in his own,
Sarah.
Own way.
Yes.
Sarah?
The regular girl.
Yes.
You know, I want you to understand one thing. You know, for 45 years, this was in the back of my mind, and I didn't remember it because of all the alcohol and everything else I had done. Yet, even as a young man in my teens, you know, 19, 18, 19, 20s, a young man, I was ashamed of my body. Okay?
Yeah.
I was ashamed of my body in front of my girlfriend, my wife, you know. I was ashamed of my body. You know, and when I relived, you know, I mean, literally relived it to the point of, you know, mentally wanting to kill myself. I've been reduced to the point that, you know, I can't maintain an erection. You know,
I get it. I get it.
You know,
I have no sex back either.
You know, and it's
we have to accept the fact
it's
that
terrible.
It's brain damage, man. You know, it comes down to being abused at certain times. I mean, it's brain damage. It's going to affect you in so many ways. It could be physically, mentally, you name it. You know, what about the time of those precious times when you want to be intimate with the person you love, but things come into your mind? You know, they affect you mentally and physically at the time, and it destroys things.
Like, I have a question for you, because I really related to when you were telling that part of the story about how traumatic it was to tell the story for the first time. I really related, resonated with that. So my question is, and there's an aspect of your story that has to do with the public humiliation, and I found myself thinking, man, what an amazing, like, drama series this would be because of the elements that it contains. But you would have to be able to tell it again in a script. And I just, like, even for myself, like, I have parts of my story that I have not been able to tell yet because it is so traumatic to tell it. I really resonate with that part of your story. So my question for you is this, in terms of your memory with it, would you be able, do you think that you would be able to do it again and write a script, or is it really just too effing much?
No, I could easily do it.
You could.
I've come so far, and I've been there, and I realize what it has done for so many other people. When I put my story out there, I could not believe how many close family relationships of people that grew up around our family had been abused by the church. And
I know.
Then it was amazing that the nanny I hired to help with my kids when my business was growing so big called me up and said, I can't believe this story, you know, because I was, gang raped as a child, you know. And so, I mean, no, I have no problem with that.
Or like all those people in the community knew. Like I know a community like that. Like all those people in the community knew because there was public humiliation involved.
Yeah.
She was part of it. Everybody knew this guy. Even the community
I don't have any problem with her anymore. If somebody has a problem with me telling my story or speaking the truth, it's their problem now.
It's a real breakthrough moment, isn't it? I'm just going through it. I can feel it. It's like breaking through an egg. I can feel it.
I can't say enough about how far Steve has come, along with myself, because we have done this together. Let me tell you something. When we finally got a chance, you know, to get together and really absorb the fact that we were abused by the same rapist, you know, and we became, you know, friends again, it was one of the best things that ever happened in my life to know that he's there for me at any time. We talk about cooking. We talk about all kinds of stuff, you know, not every day, but at least we communicate with each other, you know. Now, how often do you know a relationship where two people, not to mention more, were actually abused by the same person and can carry on a relationship like we have? It's few and far, you know. I would say hardly any, in my opinion, you know. And it's one of those things that I'm blessed to have Steve in my life. There's no question about it, you know. But I do want to say that we do have another caller that has called in. It's Billy from Massachusetts. And he wants to, you know, come in and talk on the show a little bit because he's been listening the whole time. And, you know, he is a wonderful guy, you know. So I do want to bring Billy in. I'm going to unmute your mic, Billy, so you can talk to Steve, okay? Go ahead, man.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
How you
right,
doing, Billy?
Steve, good. How you doing? Just want to tell you, it takes great courage to tell your story. I told my story on this, and it got me to a next level in recovery. I read your story, and everybody's story is different, but the priest that abused me was a deacon, then he became a priest. Married me and my wife, baptized my kids. He's still a priest in my hometown, and gone through the same route of, you know, drug use and suicide. And I've been in therapy for 8 years. You mentioned therapy, man. It's the medicine for me anyway for this type of stuff. I've done everything in my power to try to take this guy down, and so many victims in Massachusetts. Because of the law in Massachusetts is.
Oh yeah.
I actually testified in front of the Joint Committee of Massachusetts last year for a law change, and it's hopefully going to happen. But I'm just, it takes a lot of courage to go on.
Billy.
Yep,
it will, Billy. I know it will. I have faith, man. You know, if you did and I did too, let me tell you something. It's going to happen for you, brother. No question.
Oh, yeah. You got to keep plugging. I mean, I talked to someone 2 days ago, and him and I, you know, this kid, it's sad. I worked in the prison system for 19 years, and, you know, my support group, we talk, and I'm like, how many guys you think are in prison that were sexually abused? And they're like, you know, the number is high as 80%. And then you look at people that are using, I mean, easy for the outsider to look in and say, oh, this, that, he's this, he's that. But you know what the sad thing is they're burying something just like I was, and they can't. And it's hard to come forward. You know, it's not an easy thing. And I feel fortunate that I'm on the other side, and we talk about it. Intimacy and all that stuff.
Billy.
I was with someone for 20 years and we got divorced, and I haven't had a relationship, and I evaluate, you know, what I went through and why I wouldn't hug my wife and why I would push her away. And, you know, it's the effect. Murder of the soul is the best way to put it in my mind.
It is. Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Billy, can I comment to you?
Oh, hell yeah. Yep.
There's a couple of things that you said to there, you know. One is, I'm so sorry, you know, but, I divorced my wife, and I remarried her. And we've been together, except for those 2 years, since 1982.
That's awesome.
You know, and, so, I mean, that was, you know, one of the benefits of my life. But what I never knew is that she had been abused by her parents.
Oh, wow.
You know, and she didn't, I didn't get that out of her until, you know, good 30 years into our marriage. Here was two abuse victims that were attracted to each other because they both suffered. Don't ever think that something can't work. You just got to figure out what the problem is.
There's really no other better words. Is I'm nervous, I'm scared, and, you know, in my marriage, I wasn't coherent. I smoked a lot of weed, did a lot of pills. My brain wasn't breathing, and my brain's breathing now, and it's, you know, I'm very well aware of going out with
good
the wrong person, too, there. I'm very well aware of. I want a clean person. I want a fresh start. You know what I mean? And hard to find. I'm picky, and I'm alone a lot, but I'd rather be alone than just like those friends you had to get away from. And I love those guys, but they're still using, you know? And it's like, it's the same thing with a relationship. I can't be in someone else's mess, you know?
Hey, Billy?
Yeah?
Those aren't your only friends in life.
That's right. That's great.
You know, find new friends if they're going to do nothing but entice you to destroy yourself.
Oh, yeah. No, I appreciate that.
You know, because friends to me are people like John, and we sit back and we can talk to each other face-to-face or whatever, and say, hey, you know, today's a bad day. I need someone to talk to. And, you know, I really appreciate, you know, there are numerous people that I've talked to that I really appreciate that I can say, oh, gosh, I just got triggered, you know. I'm having a bad time, you know. Yeah. So those are good things.
You know, Steve's got great point right there, you know, is that we always talk about therapy, right, and about different kinds of therapy and who to go to and how to talk to and this and that. But I've always found that the best therapy for me, okay, and for a lot of people that I know, is to have a good, you know, decent relationship with someone else that has been a survivor, you know, because they really understand what you've been through, you know, regardless of the story, okay? But, you know, everybody's story to me is just as harmful as the other one, right? But that's not what it's really about, is it? It's really about helping these people grow and heal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because we all need that. Because will we always be healed of it? I doubt it. You know, there's always going to be something that's going to trigger you along the way in your life. But how far can you come? What is it going to take for you to get over this stuff of not coming forward, period? You know? So that's one thing, you know, that he's got a good point about, is actually getting with, you know, people that are other survivors and can understand the fact of you know, where you're coming from deep inside, you know. That's the main point of it.
There's certain people that I talk to about it, and there's certain people that I don't. Like my sister, for instance, I know she means well. And you guys, everyone I think here knows, it's like I could tell my sister blue in the face how I'm feeling, and I know her intentions are right and listening and trying to help me, but for someone who hasn't been abused, it's just it's hard for them to understand. And I say that innocently. My sister is there for me, but like my therapist, like I spilled my guts to a woman, and my therapist was abused by a priest also, and that's why it was easy for me to connect with her, you know. It's the people outside the box mean well, but they don't understand. They don't understand, and I know they mean well.
That's a really good point.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's like,
Billy,
they're outside the box, you know.
Yep.
Billy?
Yep.
I can tell you one thing. You know, the only person that really knows about the full in-depth of my abuse, there's two people, you know, and that's my wife and my sister, who's a child developmental psychiatrist. My parents have, only thing they have is all the court records and everything else, because they want to know. And I said, do not talk to me about this. And that's okay. I said, you know, you can read the entire report, but I don't want to hear anything else. You know, you can see what happened to me, but please don't talk to me in person about it. And, you know, but I have a very good relationship, a much better relationship with my family now that they're all aware.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd have to agree with you, too, as my brother and sister. My mom passed a couple years back, and my dad died when I was four, and I met this priest to do probation hours with him, and he was, you know, I was 14, but as it all goes along, I mean, and that, when I did what you're doing a couple months back, my brother, my sister, my uncle were on the show, and it helped them understand. I can't stress enough how important it was for me to be on the show, and it helped them understand even more. So it was just it was a good step, to be honest with you.
You know, and I do want to say something else on top of that, is that, let me tell y'all something, is that we have some beautiful guests that are going to be coming on the show, along with tonight with Steve. We have some serious people coming on to the show, guys. So anytime that you all want to participate, just like Billy's doing tonight, you know, this is what we're here for. This is exactly what we're here for, you know, so... I just want to give that call-in number out. It's area code 646-595-2118. It's our dedicated number here for NASCA. So let me say this, is that you're hearing it straight up from survivors, okay, that are coming together tonight, sharing the stories, talking about what it takes, you know, to get through these times as we continue on this journey. But we've all come together as a family here at NASCA. So this is the thing, is that we offer a platform for everyone to come share their stories. Whenever a regular girl comes on and she talks on this show, let me tell you something. She has extensive when I say extensive, she has massive amounts of learning, you know, in educational platforms. You know, everyone that's here tonight, Kim, you know, I mean, we're talking about some serious stuff here. And myself, and we got Carol, we got so many people here. You know, so I can't thank everyone that is participating into the show. And you can also do this. So if you're thinking that, you know, whatever you say, or you're scared to say something, or you don't want to come out and talk about it, let me tell you something. Your life can change. It can change for the best. And let me tell you something. You have a whole new world of people out here that are willing and capable of being there for you if you really need someone. Okay? So, again, you know, our website is www.nasta.org. And I gave you the call-in number. This clip is always going to be available. What a great show. I mean, we're talking about some serious stuff here, man. Go ahead, Steve.
John, I want to add to that.
Go right ahead.
You don't have to come forward. You don't have to come forward with your name. You're
That's
welcome
true.
To talk to us privately. You know, I originally came out as a John Doe, you know, mm-hmm. and then I, you know, said, no, I'm putting my name out there. I don't care because it wasn't my fault. So don't be afraid to come out as a John or Jane Doe.
Yep. Very good point. Very good point.
Yeah.
We understand. You know, sometimes that's the way people want to do things, and it's perfectly okay. You know, in fact, you know, whenever Billy had called in earlier, and I was like, okay, hey, Bill, how you doing? You know, do you want to talk on the show tonight? Well, I'm just listening. I said, well, listen, if you want to, you know, talk, and we open the mics up. He said, yeah, if you do, then sure. You know, well, this is just another example of where people get to and then where they go, you know, and then what they become. It's amazing to hear Billy's voice tonight. What a true warrior. You know, listen to Steve tonight, the confidence. You know, this man has grown in the past 2 to 3 years like no one has ever seen. And I see this all the time. You know, so this is what it takes. It takes Steve for being here tonight, you know. You, man, you're such a beautiful person, Steve. And I'm really proud of you, buddy.
Yeah.
And you too, Billy.
I appreciate it.
All of you.
Look,
yeah, you are making a
you know,
brave.
This is a situation where, you know, I want people to understand, yes, I wanted to go kill myself again in 2019. And I want people to understand you can heal and you can stay there and be with the people you love. You know, so don't think that it's the end.
That's true. You know, that's another thing, too, about, you know, NASCO, our website. Listen, if you go into our website and you go into our front page and just look on the front, we have all about recovery is one major area that I talk a lot about on my shows, you know, with Kim a lot. We actually rely on this show because this is exactly what we're talking about tonight, you know. We have another one, Protecting Our Kids, and you can participate at NASCA. This is exactly what we're doing tonight. We're actually participating at NASCA. So anyone could come on the show if you want to, you know, come on the show and tell your story. Hey, get in touch with me. You know, I'm on the contact list. All you have to do is go on there. You see the contact list. I'm there. Bill Murray's there, our president, Carol Levine. We can get you booked at any given time. But look, it's not about just you coming on the show. It's about you meeting new people. It's about you telling your story. It's about you sharing your experience. Because without us knowing what you went through, we're not going to know how to deal with it. We're not going to know how to communicate with the future, with our kids now and everything else. There's way too much. And look at Billy's talking about him going on to, you know, testifying with the committee. Look, I know what that's all about. We need more of you because without that, laws do not get changed, you know. In fact, Steve, while I'm bringing this up, you know, since everything's happened, we now in Louisiana have gotten the statute of limitations abolished. And you were a part of that. You know you were.
Yeah.
I was there, but you were there with me. I know you were. I talked to you every single day. We were relating. So what's your thought process now to know that not only were we a part of this, but the entire state of Louisiana is setting an example of getting a limitation, okay? And I hate the word limited, right? On a child rape, you know, that's what it gets down to. Well, let's just shoot it, you know?
Child rape, we can put it in child rape, child sexual abuse. We can put it in so many different terms, you know, because of the wonderful judicial system we have. But you have the limitations removed is incredible. Mm-hmm. It's causing chaos. You know, I still look at the Epstein Maxwell trial, and we still don't know who the actual people were. Why not? You know, why don't we have these open records?
Yep. Perfect example of the old
studies. Why do we have a judge sealing the records on bankruptcy, which is supposed to be an open record, situation? We're supposed to be able to see all the records. Anybody that has a claim against him is supposed to be able to see open records. You know, why can't we see them? Where are all the documents? You know, so, statute of limitations is one step. I'm sorry. One step. The next one is going to be no concealment of documents.
That would be another.
You know.
Also extended criminal activity also. We have a 3-year window at the present time. I'm trying to work with some legislative, some actual guys in the area, local guys, that could help us in a bill that would also abolish that part too.
This is part of our life. This is a major part of our life.
They have a system what they call canon law, right? That is their hidden archives. That's their secrecy that seems to be the gem of all the cases, all the secrets, all of the abuse files, that was supposed to be sent to the Vatican. They have to go through a process of it, which means they have to go through a regional, and they got to go through a national, and then so forth, but none of that ever got done.
Well, supposedly, according to the archdiocese, we could request the entire priest record after they died.
Mm-hmm.
And I was denied.
Well, that's got to stop. No question that's got to stop. And I would say
denied.
This too, while we're talking about this, is that from the same school, okay, that Steve and I went to, I know of a fact, okay, and this is true, that there were 24, okay, that I know of from this school alone, okay, that were affected by two different people. One would have been George Brignac, okay? The other one. Yes, and the other one was Le Bourgeois, Father Le Bourgeois, okay, who
yeah.
was there right before Sister Agnes was the principal, right at that time, he was there. So which would have been in 1972, 3, and 4, around that time. So he also has credible allegations against him, right? So we're only talking about one school in River Rouge, Louisiana, right, that is a tight-knit community. Everybody knows one another. You know, when things like this happen, our best friends know, their friends know, then, you know, the entire community. And this is exactly what happened in both of our cases, you know. So I would encourage you all to follow up on what's going to happen in the future with all of this, because, as Steve said, you know, the Archdiocese of New Orleans is trying to file bankruptcy, right? Okay? When there's 400 and over 26 cases or more pending, okay? So in my opinion, and which is not just my opinion, the only reason I say this is because on a broad scale of talking to a variety of lawyers and senators and people at council, all kind of people, why should there ever be a bankruptcy allowed if there's ever any type of ongoing investigations, okay, which is still happening right now? We have still two or three priests that are still alive, okay, that are going to get brought to trial to, you know, to get their cases done. And these people are credible. And that's another thing about anybody deals with the archdiocese, okay, you're going to know that there's what they call a bishop's accountability list, right? Okay? That list alone is what they put on, okay? Now, there's another accountability list, and that is the accused, okay? That means that how many of these priests, and I'm going to give you a stat here in a second, and I know Steve knows the answers to this one, but how many were accused but were never convicted, okay? Never convicted, okay? Now, in New Orleans, I can tell you this, is that now we have over 80, and I was a part of this, and Steve was a part of it too, and so was a few other people, that we got them on this, you know, a bishop's accountability list, right? Okay? Then out of that 80, now these are the ones that are truly actually, I mean, they are creditable, you know, child abuse offenders. How many do you think out of those were convicted? Just take a wild guess. Now we're talking 80, okay? Now, use your head. How many out of that 80 do you think were ever convicted? Just take a guess.
Two.
Absolutely none.
Ten.
Except for George Brignac. George Brignac.
I threw that out there just for the fun of it.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. Well, let me tell you what happens is that when he finally does get convicted, okay, guess what happens? He dies. The man dies, okay?
Yep.
So that's what happened. I never got to, as a man, confront this monster, okay, in a court of law where I was desperately wanting to so bad. It was coming down to it, you know? Yes, I was.
John,
I was right there with you. I know that. We were all there. We were waiting.
I wanted to be in front of him so bad.
Yep, I couldn't wait, you know. But I was on the stand, unfortunately, when I was 9. Okay, when I tried to convict this monster with my family, you know, we actually took him to court, and the guy was acquitted. When I had witnesses, I had the whole school knew, the whole community knew. You know, we talked about this already tonight, but look what happened. And then he goes on, and for what we know, you know, rapes 27 other boys. You know, this is just, it can't happen anymore. You know, the lives that this one man affected is unbelievable. You know, and it's a true story, and I'm so so sorry about my brother Steve here was one too, you know. But let me tell you something. Without him and myself and a couple other guys down here, we would not even be close to where we are today, because we never gave up. You know, once we came together, let me tell you something. Our team, and I say a team, we were deadly when it comes down to getting shit done. And I'll just say it straight up, because we weren't scared anymore. You know, it took that much, you know, for us to come forward and get to know each other, to get, you know, that bond and the strength to move on and say, hey, now, you know, now we got to protect the kids, man. You know, this is what it's all about.
John, I have no more fear.
Nope. And you can't say that.
I have no more fear.
But you can't say that when we first didn't get together on this. We both had a little fear in the beginning.
I was terrified.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. In the beginning, I was terrified. Mm-hmm. To the point that I wanted to kill myself again. You know? So, don't take that the wrong way. Right now, I'm fearless. I don't, you know, you can put a contract out of my life, and I don't care. You know, but, you know, I can tell you this much.
No, don't do that.
I'm holding my ground.
Yes, he is. No question about it. So, Kim, I was thinking, you know, we got about 20 minutes left, if that. You know, we still have Billy out there listening, regular girl still on, too. Can we just go ahead and maybe open the mics up for the rest of the night? Do you good with that?
Oh, yeah, there are.
So,
Steve,
what about you, Kim?
I was going to ask, now, you have children, I assume. Have you and your wife had kids?
Are you talking to Steve?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have two girls and a boy, and five grandsons.
Oh, they're the best, aren't they? How did it affect? Oh, they are. I know. I love the grandbabies. I've got five as well.
I'm sorry. What's that?
And one on the way. I've got five grandchildren as well. Two of them are girls.
There you go.
But and then another one on the way, and they're the best. But how did your abuse affect you raising your children? Because was it something that at the time you hadn't quite addressed, and so it was hard? Yeah. Well, yeah. Hopefully, everybody would be overly protective.
A
lot of times
it's hugely overprotective.
Don't. No. Yeah.
One of my daughter's boyfriends abused her on a date, and I found out no one would tell me, and I found out years later when she was already married to another man. And still pulled him into a back alley and had some friends take care of him.
I want to say that.
I love that story.
I don't blame you at all.
He's already told me about
he
it.
Walked
so
away.
I'm good with it.
He walked away a little bruised up.
That's awesome.
And he ended
okay.
up in jail.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Yeah,
because I know I was overly protective with my kids. Is he? with my kids, too. But I didn't know how to necessarily protect them. You know, I could say things and try and stay open communication with them. But I think that now there are so many other resources and ways that we can connect with our kids. And that's something that I just like to touch on every show, too, is, you know, it is important that we talk to our kids from a young age. And I didn't have that,
but
I have grandkids now that I do. So, yeah, go ahead.
The biggest thing is communication. you know.
Yeah.
I can tell you that, you know, communication and being open, you know, something that was never happened in my family was being open about sex. But kids need to know about sex a little bit at a young age or in their teenage age, you know, and not just, nothing needs to be hidden. Because it was hidden as,
oh, no,
as
I
you know, with me as a child.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. Well, see, they go out, and this is why we suggest 8 years old, is because they're going to hear things on the playground between, like, third, fourth grade.
Oh, yeah.
That's when kids start talking. And sometimes even earlier these days. And so, you know, I have two grandchildren that are going into fifth grade, and I'm like, you know, I just can't imagine what they know. It'll be everything they know. But they do know because I've tried to stay open to them and, you know, and talk to them about body safety specifically. And I have body safety books that I keep on my bookshelf for my grandkids. And that starts conversations.
Right.
And so, yeah,
well,
it's been
I'll
really helpful.
Laugh
idea.
Having... I'll make you laugh again. My daughter called up one day and said, so I was in this, and this is a while back, you know, and I think, you know, it was, you know, one of her two-year-olds or something. She was taking a shower, and she had a two-year-old in there with her, and he said, "Hey, Mommy, you got a really hairy penis."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and you have to laugh at it. I mean, she goes, "Okay,
yeah.
no more sorrow with the boys." But you know, it's
right.
You know, kids have to learn at a young age, and you know, I've seen so many troubled kids, and I was raised in a family that, you know, my mom drove a bus for the handicapped, and I've seen so many things in my life, you know, that I'm blessed in some ways and cursed in others. But I'm glad I'm still here to tell my story, and I'm hoping
yeah.
that other people can sit back and say, "Yes, I'm still here for a reason."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We're all here to help each other, right?
Well, we have to be.
Every day.
You know, we have
that's
to
right.
be here for each other.
Yeah,
let me tell you
crazy.
Something.
Yep.
Days can be tough, you know, but any day that I have a rough day, I know what I need to do now. You know, I need to reach out. You know, I need to do something productive. And this is why I produce the shows for NASCA. This is why I communicate on a massive level with survivors. Because I want to know the stories. You know, it means a lot to me that someone would open up and tell their story and share their story, because it's all about the platform that we create here to educate the public, right? To make sure that they know if they need help.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, we know what to do. You know, we might not have all the answers for every situation, but at least we know a lot of people, okay? And that's the main thing here.
Oh, yeah.
is to know the people. And once you finally connect with someone that will send you in that right road to stay on, you might be on this road for the rest of your life. And that's what the most beautiful thing is about it, you know, is hooking up with these people and connecting. Because without
it's all about,
let me tell you
it's
something.
About,
yep.
it's all about talking about it. Is yesterday I had a kid call me, and we're friends, and he called me, and we talk periodically. He goes, I see two people that you're friends with on your Facebook that the priest that did that to me did it to them too. And that's all just from talking and getting it out there. And, mm-hmm. I mean, that priest is in jail for a second time. It's beautiful. He was in jail mm-hmm. in Massachusetts. Then he got convicted again for taking someone over the border into New Hampshire. Now he's in a New Hampshire prison. But unfortunately, he was in Massachusetts for a long time. And there's a lot of kids, I mean, as we all know, it's like you can't force someone to talk about it until they're ready. But there's so many broken people that this priest affected. But just from this kid looking on my Facebook page, because I'm looking at two right now, and he's a victim of the guy too.
And, you know, that's a perfect point, Billy, is the fact that, you know, that's the Mann Act, you know, and we know what that is. However, I do want to reemphasize about that is that right now, right here in New Orleans, the FBI is finally here, okay? We are now, they are investigating, you know, the situations involved with that. And, of course, that's going to lead to a lot of other things, you know?
Yeah.
Because that is, I mean, basically, and it's a shame that it has to go to that extreme, right, for the FBI to get involved. The fact, oh, you took them over straight state lines or county lines or parish lines, what does it matter if you took them around the corner, you know?
Yeah.
Or you took them inside the school, you know?
Yeah.
That is a bunch of the most, I hate that. I really do, because, you know, you violated this child, you know, and that's what it needs to be.
I was teaching time, and I had mentioned that a friend of mine at her school, she had brought up a concern about another aide at the school, and he was let go. And then, even though they found that everything that she said, you know, they found to be true, he was let go, and it wasn't told to any of the other school districts. So my friend lives in a different school district, and she teaches at a different school district that I lived in. And I got really irritated. I was like, why isn't somebody saying something before this guy comes over into my grandchildren's school district? You know, but they're like, we can't. We can't say anything. We can't. I'm like, why? They are abusing children, and you're just letting them walk away and just making them somebody else's problem. And that's so frustrating. That's so frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was that talking? Was that Sarah?
No, that was Kim.
No, this was Kim.
That was Kim. I'm sorry, Kim.
Yeah.
This is Steve. I didn't hear you introduce yourself. You know, look, we've dealt with this for so long, and we've got to get it solved. You know, it's got to be resolved that, you know, the churches or the schools cannot hide any of this anymore, period.
No, they should not be. And I'm frustrated that it's never gotten that far.
Far for way too long.
Right.
Dude, the priest that did it to me is still a priest in my hometown.
I know, Billy. That's unbelievable, man. Look, if I can help you with anything, you let me know, brother. You know, I'm about justice. I am. And there's something wrong there. No
question. Well, you know what's wrong? His cousin was the mayor. His cousins are involved in the town. They all work for the DPW or their cops.
Mm-hmm.
He's a protected pedophile. There's no doubt about it. And he makes that place a lot of money.
Yep. Because it's true. The same thing happened in my trial with the deacon that was acquitted. And the same person, you know, that abused Steve. is that he was acquitted in a trial when I had multiple witnesses, eyewitnesses, and they were bringing witnesses in to actually, you know, support him that he didn't even know, right? So we have so much stuff against him now. I'm not going to get into a lot of that because we can't these days because there's a lot of litigations going on. However, the time is now, though. Is that we can't hold back any longer, ladies and gentlemen. If y'all out here listening, listen to this show. This is a valuable piece of information of what your life can be. Everybody here has grown to a level now where we are working together. We're going to get stuff done, you know, and just like regular girl comes on and shares her story earlier and what Kim's telling us, absolutely beautiful stuff. We need this. So I do encourage everyone, you know, that's listening to please come on the show, share your story, you know, and let us know. You know, let's get involved. Let's do it.
Good stuff.
Yeah, we all need to let's all make some noise. Well, thank you, Steve, so much for being on with us tonight. We so appreciate it and all of your input and
look.
And I know it was me listening to you and John go back and forth. So, yeah, go ahead.
This is about survivors, not about me. Yes, my story is important, but if you're out there and you're having a hard time, don't think you're alone. I have no interest in wanting sorrow from you. I have an interest in making sure that you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so please, you know, ask for help. I did, and I couldn't believe the amount of support I've got. So please, if there's anybody out there that, is, having an issue, whether it's through sexual assault or anything else,
any abuse,
please come out. Yes. Please come out and ask for help. There is so much help out here. I don't want you to, you know, think that it's only about one thing. No, there's so much out there that hurts people. So please come forward. Please ask for help. You know, we're all here. And John, as you know, if anybody wants my number, they're welcome to call me.
Yep.
You have my number. So
Steve, do you have like an email that you share, or do you want to just have them go through John? I'm sorry. Did you have an email?
If anyone is listening to the show, if Steve wants to share his email, that is great. However, you know, please include me if you want to. I want to be there. If you know, for some reason you don't, that is perfectly fine. I have the information, but I would like to be a part of it, you know, because just the way things are, you know, it's just that when you find people in this world like Steve, they're few and far, okay? And I'm telling you that the man is an angel when it comes to being there for people, and he always will be. That I can testify for. And let me tell you something. If there is anyone that's listening out here, and wants to talk to Steve, he'll be glad to give you his information. So, Steve, yeah.
It's McAvoy, McEvoyENT, Edward Nancy Thomas, at AOL.com.
Okay.
Are you on Facebook?
What's that? Yes, I am. And it's Steve McAvoy.
Okay. So we can look at you up. Okay. Well, thank you so much again, Steve, for being on. It was so nice to meet you, and maybe someday we'll meet in person.
Don't confuse it, because there is a Stephen McAvoy Jr. So it's Steve McAvoy.
Okay, no junior. Okay.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you,
well,
Billy.
Thank you so much for that.
Yep.
And everybody,
thank
remember
you.
To see say something.
All right.
Love y'all.
Have a good night.
Y'all have a great night.
You too.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was